Bright white twinkling stars fall against a black background. They converge, forming a single bright star which sits behind gold lettering. United Artists, an MGM company. White dots pass across a black screen. One of the dots expands to form a view from inside a gun barrel. James Bond turns and aims a pistol. A blood-red curtain oozes down over the gun barrel, which reverts back to a white dot and sweeps down to the corner of the screen. The dot opens out to reveal the skyscrapers of New York, clustered around the massive rectangular block of the United Nations building. In the General Assembly Hall, a representative from Hungary speaks.
Ezt a fontos és érzékeny osztagot. Senki sem tagadhatja, és ezt én kénytelen vagyok.
Somber-faced delegates sit listening. Behind a plaque which reads United Kingdom is a jowly middle-aged man with thinning hair. Up in a booth, a translator talks into a microphone. Beside him is a distribution box with leads coming out of it. The leads are labeled with the names of the countries.
Was so ably pointed out by the Secretary General in his opening remarks. But, and I must emphasize this point, no formula can or will ever cover each case.
Someone pulls the white lead marked United Kingdom out of the distribution box. The UK delegate frowns. The intruder plugs a red lead into the socket and depresses a plunger on a device connected to it. The UK delegate flinches as sound fills his ears. The man grimaces and flops unconscious onto the table. People start to notice and get up from their seats, concerned. New Orleans, Louisiana. A tough-looking guy in his 40s, wearing a blue suit and a trilby, stands smoking on the sidewalk. He looks across the street to a restaurant. A gaudy, orange electric sign reads, Filet of Sole. He glances round at a couple of old-timers marching, with jerky, robotic steps, at the head of a funeral procession. A uniformed band slowly follows. One of the old-timers has a sash across his chest which reads, Olympia Brass Band. The band members' peaked caps also have Olympia written across them. Behind the band are pallbearers carrying a coffin. As the suited guy watches, a squat, bespectacled guy walks up and stands next to him. They exchange cursory glances, then continue watching the procession. A weeping woman is consoled by two young men in black suits. The guy in blue turns to the squat guy.
Whose funeral is it?
Yours.
He lies dead by the curb. The pallbearers walk over, place the coffin over the guy, then lift it up. He's gone. The procession marches on. Suddenly, one of the trumpeters raises his gleaming silver horn. The crowd of previously somber mourners at the back of the procession raise brightly coloured feathery umbrellas and start to dance, as does the woman who was crying and her two companions. Everyone jigs energetically down the street, grinning. An old lady clicks her fingers. Three guys in funky multicoloured clothes strut around and jump in the air. San Monique, an island in the Caribbean. In a jungle lit by torches, three men lift a woman into the air and carry her through a crowd who are frantically dancing. A witch doctor emerges. He wears animal skins and has a goat's head on top of his head. He holds a large yellow and green snake in the air. A distinguished-looking middle-aged man is tied to a post. Two old women come over and splatter blood from a bowl onto his face. He recoils. The witch doctor holds the snake's head out towards the man. The crowd dances ever more feverishly. The witch doctor's bright white teeth gleam in the sweltering night. Sweat drips off the terrified man's face. The snake lunges and bites his neck. The man expires. His head lolls forward. Orange torch flames flicker in darkness. A woman's sultry form appears out of the gloom, low light caressing her velvety skin.
You used to say,
the woman disappears in a burst of fire. Harry Saltzman and Albert R. Broccoli present Roger Moore as James Bond 007 in Ian Fleming's
Say Live and Let Die.
A woman stares straight out with wide, terrified eyes and flames rising from the top of her head. Her face alternates with a skull consumed by flames. Starring Yaphet Kotto and introducing Jane Seymour. Framed in one of the skull's eye sockets, a woman slowly dances. She's silhouetted against multicolored flames and flying sparks. Featuring Clifton James, Jeffrey Holder, Julius W. Harris, David Hedison, Gloria Hendry, Lois Maxwell, and Bernard Lee as M. A woman with tribal markings on her arms and face appears behind showers of sparks. With Tommy Lane, Earl Jolly Brown, Lon Satin, Roy Stewart, B.J. Arno, and Ruth Kempf. A silhouetted woman dances in front of multicolored fiber optic strands. Color by Rank Film Laboratories. Main title designed by Morris Binder. Director of Photography, Ted Moore, BSc. Title song composed by Paul and Linda McCartney. And performed by Paul McCartney and Wings.
You used to say, live and let live. But if this ever-changing world in which we live in...
A woman's face with dark, piercing eyes and full, shining lips stares out from behind flickering, translucent flames.
Live and let die.
Hands clasped together as if in prayer are silhouetted over a skull engulfed in flames, and then the naked back of a woman with long, blonde hair. The hands open out. Produced by Harry Saltzman and Albert R. Broccoli. Directed by Guy Hamilton. A woman lies asleep in bed. She has dark hair and long dark eyelashes. James Bond, on whom her head is resting, is woken by the door buzzer. His left arm is round the woman. He raises it up and presses the watch to read the time. It's 5:48.
Time again. Ma non è possibile, amore.
Bond tears himself away from the woman, who remains in bed. M is standing at Bond's front door. Bond walks out of the bedroom.
Married by any chance, are you?
Bond fastens his dressing gown as he goes to the door. His eyes widen when he sees M. He unlocks the safety chain.
Good morning, 007.
Good morning.
M strides past Bond and removes his overcoat.
Insomnia, sir?
Instructions. You haven't much time. I'll explain as you pack.
Bond hangs the coat up in a closet.
Pack, sir?
Three of our agents have been killed during the last 24 hours. Dawes in New York, Hamilton in New Orleans, and Baines in the Caribbean.
Oh, Baines. I rather like Baines. We share the same bootmaker. Coffee? Sir?
M, on his way into Bond's bedroom, stops, looks at 007, then walks into the kitchen. Bond scans the bedroom but doesn't see the woman. He follows M into the kitchen.
I take it these killings are connected.
That's precisely what you're going to find out.
M watches as Bond grinds the coffee beans, then takes the filter holder over to an espresso machine and inserts it.
Baines was working on a small island in the Caribbean called San Monique. Dawes was in New York, keeping an eye on its prime minister, one Dr. Kananga. Hamilton was on loan to the Americans in New Orleans.
Bond half fills the cup with coffee, adds milk, and places the frother in the cup.
Is that all it does?
Bond hands M the coffee.
By the way, congratulations seem to be in order. The Italians were most impressed by the way you handled the Rome affair.
Thank you, sir. Sugar?
M's on his way from the kitchen.
Oh, thanks.
Well, the authorities were more than helpful.
There's one small complaint. They seem to be missing one of their agents, a Miss Caruso.
Miss Moneypenny lets herself in and spots Miss Caruso.
You wouldn't happen to know where she is.
She's in the closet.
Ah, Miss Moneypenny.
Good morning, Moneypenny.
Good morning, sir.
It's only the hour that's indecent.
Really? I've got your ticket to New York. Q has repaired your wristwatch. And some background material on San Monique.
Thank you, Moneypenny.
I'm sure the overburdened British taxpayer would be fascinated to know how the Special Ordnance Section disperses its funds. In future, Commander, allow me to suggest a perfectly adequate watchmaker just down the street.
M's teaspoon flies across to the watch.
Good God.
You see, by pulling out this button, sir, it turns the watch into a hyper-intensified magnetic field, powerful enough to even deflect the path of a bullet, at long range, or so Q claims.
I feel very tempted to test that theory right now. If you don't mind, Commander, my spoon.
Oh, sorry, sir.
Thank you. Dr. Kananga is at present in New York. The CIA have been informed, and they're helping out with the surveillance. Your flight arrives at 11:30 a.m. Now. But I need my coat.
Oh, allow me.
Miss Moneypenny slides open the wardrobe door and reaches in for M's coat. Bond looks curious as she slides the door shut again.
Thank you. Come along, Miss Moneypenny. Good morning, Bond.
Sir, Miss Moneypenny. Thank you.
Goodbye, James.
On her way out, she turns.
What should I say? Ciao, bello.
She leaves. Bond, a smile on his face, strolls over to the wardrobe and is about to open it. Then he stops and pulls out the button on the watch. He waves it close to the metal door handle and the door opens. Miss Caruso turns to him.
Siamo soli.
Finalmente.
She puts her arms around him. He uses the magnetic watch to undo her zip.
Such a day.
Sheer magnetism, Danny.
The Pan Am flight takes to the air. Elsewhere, a woman turns over a tarot card.
A man comes.
She turns another card.
He travels quickly.
And a third.
He has purpose. He comes over water. He travels with others. He will oppose. He brings violence and destruction.
The plane touches down and Bond marches through the concourse of an airport in suit, shirt and tie. He carries a slim suitcase and an attaché case. He stands at the terminal exit and raises an eyebrow when he spots a copper-coloured car with 545BBB on its New York plates, the same numbers on the luggage ticket. A man with a pockmarked face sits at the wheel. The car drives away from the terminal, with Bond in the back seat. The driver picks up a buzzing telephone.
Hello? Mr. Lido for you, sir.
Thank you. Hello, Felix. How are you?
Traffic permitting, I should be with you in about half an hour. Then you can buy me the best lunch in New York.
Fine, James. Your friend Kanang has just left the UN. He's probably headed back to his embassy. No, don't worry. I've got the place eyeballed, wired for sound, the works. Right. I'll see you in about a half hour.
The car drives along a riverside highway under a tall suspension bridge. A white Cadillac drives up alongside Bond's car, and the two vehicles travel side by side. The tubby, bearded driver of the Cadillac adjusts the crosshair sights in his wing mirror until they are aimed directly at Bond's driver. He presses a button and a dart flies out of the mirror towards Bond's driver. The Cadillac zooms away. Bond's driver's foot slips on the accelerator as blood trickles from a wound in his head.
Easy, Charlie. Let's get there in one piece. Charlie?
Their car hits another side on. Charlie slumps to one side and Bond stretches from the back seat to steer the car. Bond drives between two cars, bumping one of them against the safety barrier. Bond struggles to reach the brake. He twists the car between other vehicles on the road. Just as the road ahead seems clear, traffic joins the highway from both sides. Bond drives the car up the stone steps of a building, rips off a banister and surges across the street to collide with a parked van. In Leiter's surveillance room...
Right, stand by.
Here comes Kananga's limousine.
Leiter watches a grainy picture on a screen.
Out he gets. With the usual goon squad and the girl. Time 11:46.
Police are at Bond's car. Bond's handed a squad car's phone.
Hello, Felix. You know how I hate to trouble you, but I've run into a little bother.
Leiter listens, then sits up.
You what? Get me a making a white pimpmobile. 347, Nelson David George.
It would seem, Dr. Kananga, that the conference has not lived up to your prior expectations.
Well, we can only hope that this is a temporary setback. However, I do have some observations to make.
The conversation is being taped.
Take a letter, please. To Secretary General, Pan Island Unity Conference. Sir, I wish to point out...
He switches on a tape.
...that too many of our island neighbors have once again let themselves be bullied by United States industry. The story is an old one, the record a clear one. Since my historic statement of principles was delivered and acted upon some 6 months ago, our economic outlook has improved dramatically. By exercising our policy of friendship to all with favoritism towards none, new respect for the entire area...
The Prime Minister changes clothes. Leiter.
James, that car is registered to a shop at 33 East 65th Street. That's only a block away from here. Right. Take your time, buddy. Kananga's knitting a flag in there.
It might be the easiest thing to do.
Bond takes a taxi to the occult voodoo shop. He pays the cab driver and walks down the stairs to the shop. He opens the door and steps inside. There are imitation skulls, an open palm of the hand, goblets, statues and bottles. A young woman comes through bead curtains.
Something in heads.
Just browsing, thank you.
Bond walks over to a shelf of skulls. Written on the shelf, these are sold for rituals. The tubby bearded guy who fired the dart at Charlie enters the shop. Bond watches him go behind a curtain and through a door. The woman notices Bond watching, and he turns away. Bond picks up a toy snake.
$5.
Do you think you could gift wrap it for me, please? Lengthwise, if you don't mind. Thank you.
The woman goes through the beaded curtain. Bond sneaks behind the red velvet curtain and through the door the big man went through. He finds himself in a stone corridor. Still in his overcoat, suit, shirt, tie and gloves, Bond wanders down the corridor and comes to a garage. He spots the white Cadillac. The tape of Kananga's voice keeps turning.
Remains my first concern. Thus, San Monique's future obligations vis-a-vis her island neighbors would seem clear. Those who fawn and crawl in the face of intimidation must perforce look up to those who stand, proudly, wrapped in a justifiable self-confidence. The time has come.
The woman with Kananga has removed a wig, revealing her long brown hair. She's tied it up and slips on a long cape over a flimsy negligee. The Prime Minister's aides enter the woman's bedroom, where a chauffeur has pulled back a hinged wardrobe to reveal the doors of an elevator. In the garage, Bond is inspecting the wing mirror where the dart was fired from. He hears the elevator and drops to the floor. Bond sees five pairs of feet stride towards another car. Bond watches as the car drives into a large elevator and the doors behind it close. It emerges in an alleyway next to the occult voodoo shop. Bond runs out of a door in the alley and stands on the sidewalk to hail a taxi. As it pulls up, the woman in the shop is on the telephone.
He's tailing.
I got him in my sights.
The driver of a sedan opposite the shop sets off after the taxi. They drive along a tree-lined road. Bond's driver...
Hey, you know where you're going, man?
Uptown, I believe.
Uptown? You headed into Harlem, man.
Well, you just keep on the tail of that jukebox and there's an extra 20 in it for you.
Hey, man, for 20 bucks, I'll take you to a Ku Klux Klan cookout.
The black driver turns and grins a toothy grin at Bond. The taxi passes a Cadillac with a flying lady hood ornament.
125th, you got a honky on your tail.
The taxi turns right. At the street corner, a shoeshine boy is polishing shoes. As the cab passes, he picks up a radio.
He's heading east.
Can't miss him. It's like following a cue ball.
Bond spots the car outside the Filet of Soul bar.
That's the car. They must have gone inside. Pull up where you can.
Bond gets out of the cab and the driver leans across.
Sure hope you make friends easy. Right on, brother.
Bond strolls away. The driver picks up his radio.
He's heading on in.
The car following Bond pulls up across the street. The Filet of Soul bar has a bar with a long counter and booths opposite, and a pool table at the far end. As Bond saunters in, all eyes turn to the only white face in the bar.
Good afternoon. Bourbon and water, please.
First booth will do.
Tell him, Neat, would you?
Huh?
No ice.
That's extra, man.
Bond sits at a table against a wall with a menu written on it. He looks round the bar. A guy in a leather coat is watching him from a beaded doorway. The waiter ambles over with Bond's bourbon.
I'd like something on the side as well. Information. Three men and a girl came in.
As Bond waves a banknote, the table and section of wall revolve. The waiter grabs the cash and drinks the bourbon.
Relax, baby. Mr. Big's gonna take care of you in a minute.
Bond is sat at his table in a red brick alcove that matches the bar. The rest of the room is grey and metallic with black leather furniture. The room has a beaded partition. Two mean guys stand at the door staring at him. The guy doing the talking is sitting with his feet up, holding a gun. Bond moves slowly over to the partition and sees the elegant long-haired woman laying out cards.
Black queen on the red king, miss.
Solitaire.
My name's Bond. James Bond.
I know who you are, what you are, and why you have come. You have made a mistake. You will not succeed.
Rather a sweeping statement, considering we've never met.
Cards have followed you for me.
Now you get ripped off in Detroit, baby. You yell out to me. You hear?
One of Kananga's aides, a tall, bald, middle-aged man, enters the room with a broad grin.
Is he armed?
Solitaire turns a card and nods.
Can't be too careful in New York City these days.
The man lifts up his right arm to reveal a metal pincer-like hook in place of his hand. He reaches inside Bond's jacket and removes his Walther PPK. Using his hook, he bends the barrel of the gun and hands it back to Bond, then strides out of the room.
Funny how the least little thing amuses him.
Holding the mangled gun, Bond strides over to a bin. He turns to Solitaire's cards.
Fascinating. Well, that's you, quite obviously. An amazing resemblance. Tell me, am I in there as well?
Pick a card.
Bond picks a card. The pack has a red and white 007 design.
Turn it over.
The Fool.
You have found yourself.
No, I'm telling you, go back to L.A. and clean it up. I'm coming out there and clean you up, and I mean that. Is this the stupid mother that tailed you uptown?
There seems to be some mistake. My name is...
James is for tombstones, baby. Y'all take this honky out and waste him, now!
The fly guy strides back out. Bond turns casually to Solitaire.
Waste him? Is that a good thing?
The reading is over.
Nothing about my future?
Solitaire spreads some cards out and Bond picks one. He looks at it, then shows it to Solitaire. The lovers.
Us?
Two tall hoods grab Bond and they march him to the door.
Now, promise you'll stay right there.
I shan't be long.
A startled solitaire looks down at the cards. The lover's card is over the priestess card. Outside, Bond's thrown against a wall.
Thank you.
A hood standing above Bond beckons him forward with a gun. He walks up some steps and out into a rubble-strewn alleyway between some derelict tenements. Two hoods frog march him down the alleyway. Bond's walking towards a bin with a metal pole sticking out. His hand gravitates towards it.
Keep your hands up, honky. What do you think this is? Blow his friggin' head off, man.
As Bond passes a set of collapsible fire escape steps, he leaps up and slams them down on the hoods. He dropkicks a hood, then reaches for the dropped gun.
Stop it!
Bond does as he's told. A soberly dressed black guy, the sedan driver, has a gun pointing at him. He strides towards Bond and thrusts a wallet into his hands as he gives the two unconscious hoods a cursory glance. Bond looks at the wallet.
Arrow Strata CIA, where were you when I didn't need you?
It got obvious you weren't coming out front. Not even with that clever disguise you're wearing. White face in Harlem. Good thinking, Bond. Let's get out of here.
Strata has pocketed the hood's gun and keeps his own trained.
I'm surprised they didn't spot you too. There's a most remarkable girl back there with a deck of cards.
I saw those cards on the way up. Spades, James, every one. You were nailed the minute you left 74. There's only supposed to be one man who can pull together that much black muscle in this town. Calls himself Mr. Big. You name the business, they say he has a black concession.
They climb into Strutter's car, which is parked on a quiet, run-down street.
What would a foreign prime minister like Kananga want with an American gangster?
The question is, what would Mr. Big want with a two-bit island diplomat?
Mr. Big? Where the hell does he fit into this mess?
Strutter points at the car lighter next to a flashing red light.
A genuine Phoenix lighter. Illuminating.
Now listen, James. We just found out that Kananga's got a private plane and he's leaving for San Monique within the hour.
Well, then get me on the next available flight, will you, Felix?
I already did. I just knew you wouldn't pass up a chance to get away from where the real action is.
A tall black guy with half of his face painted white, wearing a white top hat and long white coat over a loincloth, dances among some holidaymakers.
The legendary Baron Samedi, folks. That's Samedi for those of you who speak French. Buddha God of Cemeteries, the chief of the Legion of the Dead. The man who cannot die. For our purposes, just a performer in a little musical extravaganza we've cooked up for you wonderful people.
With fire eaters in the background, the tour guide, Baron Samedi, dances around waving a cane, then caresses a scantily clad maiden tied between two crucifixes. In the hotel reception...
Name's Bond.
Ah, yes, Mr. Bond, of course. Mrs. Bond's been expecting you.
Mrs. Bond?
She arrived earlier this afternoon, sir. Said she preferred something a little more private. Bungalow 12.
Durable romantic, Mrs. Bond.
Bond follows a porter who carries his suitcase outside. His eye is drawn to a display in a shop window of a sign saying Tarot above a large High Priestess card. A contortionist scuttles along like a crab, his arms tucked behind his legs. He clambers onto a stage, then swings back and forth, resting on his hands. Bond gives the revelry a brief glance as he walks past. Samedi conducts proceedings as various dancers and contortionists gyrate and fire eaters wearing crowns of flaming torches belch flames. The porter closes the outer shuttered door of Bond's bungalow and pockets a tip. Inside, Bond's wearing a blue robe as he runs a bath. He strides out of the bathroom, adjusting his watch, and moves to the bed. He grabs his suit from beneath his holstered gun, tossing the gun back on the bed. He takes his suit to the wardrobe where he finds a rail of women's clothes. He sniffs the sleeve of one of the dresses. Bond's expression becomes more serious, and he moves back to the bed and picks up a small black vanity case. He takes a brush from the case and slides the back off to reveal a radio. He's about to speak into it, then stops and puts it down. He slides a small black box out of a leather pouch and walks to the centre of the room with it. He presses a button and a red light below a white gauge is illuminated. Bond holds the device against a bowl of fruit on a side table and then a painting above it. When he holds it against an old sculpture on the table, the gauge goes red. He crosses to a bedside phone.
Room service, please.
Bond's attention is drawn to the flowery headboard on the bed. He holds up the device.
Oh, room service, this is Mr. Bond, bungalow 12. I'd like a bottle of Bollinger, please. Slightly chilled.
Two glasses. Thank you.
Bond's found a microphone concealed in a button on the headboard. He crosses to the window and picks up the brush, extending a small aerial from it. Peering through the blinds, he taps out a Morse code signal on the brush. Bond looks towards the bathroom and then heads for his bath. As he turns off the tap, a metal grill above the bath slides open, then a metal panel behind that. Out of the darkness slithers a snake with black checkered markings. Bond sitting in the bath in front of a mirror, applying shaving foam. The snake is making its way out of the opening and down the shower hose which is behind Bond. Bond frowns, then adjusts the mirror to give himself a better view of his chin as he shaves. As the snake creeps slowly closer to Bond, the door of his bungalow opens and a waiter enters with the champagne. The waiter is the tubby guy who drove the white Cadillac.
Anybody home?
Bond frowns and stops shaving. He quickly wipes the remaining foam off his face and jumps out of the bath.
Your champagne, sir.
What was that?
Your champagne.
Put it on the table, thanks.
Bond takes the order slip from the tray and signs it.
Shall I open it?
What?
Shall I open it?
Oh, no, no, I can manage, thank you. Come on.
Thank you.
Bond hands the whispering waiter the signed slip and a tip. As Bond strides back into the bathroom, he takes a long cigar from out of a case and pulls the plug out of the bath. As Bond preens himself in a mirror above the wash basin, the snake emerges behind him from a curtain and winds its way across the floor towards him. Bond lights his cigar. As the snake inches closer, Bond shakes an aerosol can, then catches sight of the snake in an angled shaving mirror. A still Bond suddenly spins round and uses the aerosol as a flamethrower, lighting it with his cigar. The snake is barbecued. Bond puts his cigar down and sprays some of the contents of the aerosol into his hand, then rubs it onto his face. Bond walks into the now darkened bedroom. He's about to turn on the light when he sees a figure at the door. He rushes to retrieve his gun from the bed, but it's not there. A hand holding a gun inches through a crack in the door. Bond stabs the hand with his cigar, then hurls the assassin onto the bed. The assassin is an attractive black woman. An afro wig has fallen off her.
Mrs. Bond, I presume?
I'm Rosie Carver.
Wearing a low-cut white dress, she tries to replace the wig.
I guess I have a little explaining to do.
Bond, pointing a gun at her, motions her to be quiet, then pulls the bug out of the headboard.
Yes, either you or dear Uncle Felix. Custom 38, Smith & Wesson. Corrugated 3-inch stock, no serial number, standard CIA issue. Question is, why pointed at me?
The man who delivered your champagne is not a hotel waiter. I was just trying to be careful. As for Felix Leiter, you're right. I've worked for CIA down here for some time now, and he cabled me you were coming and asked if I would help out if I could.
Perhaps you'd better start by getting your head together. There's a mirror in the bathroom.
Yes. Yes. You're only my second mission, you know. My first was Baines, the agent who was killed.
It's a relief to know I'm next in line for the same kind of aid.
She slides the door across.
There's a... Oh, this...
Oh, a snake. I forgot. I should have told you should never go in there without a mongoose.
Oh, I should have never gotten into any of this. I'm going to be completely useless to you.
Oh,
Sure, we'd be able to lick you into shape.
Well, it's getting late, Mrs. Bond. Tomorrow is going to be a very busy day for us. You see, Kananga is protecting something down here, something which Baines obviously discovered. You're going to show me the spot where Baines' body was found. That, I'm afraid, only leaves us tonight to catch up on old times.
Felix told me there'd be moments like this.
What did good old Felix suggest?
If all else failed, cyanide pills. I settled for 2 bedrooms. Good night, Mr. Bond.
Mrs. Bond.
On Rose's bed is a roughly textured small black top hat with 2 blood-stained white feathers stuck in it. Rose is frozen in fear as Bond picks it up.
Well, it's just a hat, darling. Belonging to a small-headed man of limited means who lost a fight with a chicken.
It's a warning. Get it out of here!
Bond hurls it through the door.
Please don't leave me alone tonight. James, please promise me.
Her arms are wrapped tightly round Bond.
All right, darling, if you insist. I promise.
Next morning, a waiter has laid out breakfast on a terrace outside the bungalow. Bond signs for it.
Aye, thank you. Rosie! Breakfast up!
Bond has sat down and shaken out his napkin. A piece of paper has fallen from it, and he picks it up from the floor. Clipped to the blank piece of paper is a card, the Queen of Cups. Bond grins wryly to himself, then has a sip of orange juice.
Rosie, are you ready yet?
What?
I have to see about organizing a car. I'll see you in the lobby.
Rosie pokes her head round the shower curtain. Bond enters the hotel shop with the tarot display. Bond and Rosie pull up to a bustling dock in a mini moke.
Over here, sir. Over here, Gandhi. Big fish. Catch big fish, sir.
Over here. Bring your man over here. $20. Have a date.
You got warm lady. We got cold beer over here, man.
You want to catch a big fish, sir? It's only £2 over here.
Bond approaches a battered boat where the skipper's snoozing. Bond gives him a kick.
Good morning. Come on, Rosie. This one seems eager enough.
In the bay, Bond's fishing.
Excuse me. Where can I change?
The burly skipper stares at Rosie impassively.
Me. Close off. Where?
The skipper points below. Rosie opens some small double doors and climbs down some steps. The skipper looks back at Bond sitting at the stern. Down below, Rosie, wearing her afro wig, disrobes to reveal a skimpy bikini. She hangs a dress on a hook which clicks down and a panel in the wall opens. Behind the panel is a series of high-tech equipment. Radar, scanners, radio and various wires and circuitry. On the shelf is a handgun. Up on deck, the skipper is standing behind Bond, coiling up a rope. Rosie opens the double doors and raises the gun.
Stop right there. Turn around slowly.
Rosie advances on the skipper.
Keep your hands up.
The skipper raises his hands.
As I was saying, Quarrel, a lousy agent, but the compensations speak for themselves. Rosie Carver, meet the man who shares my hairbrush. Quarrel Jr.
I'm really sorry. I could have shot you.
You might have even killed me if you'd taken off the safety catch.
Having taken back possession of the gun, Quarrel returns to the wheel. A deflated Rosie sidles up to Bond, who puts a consoling hand on her bottom.
Never mind, darling. You just let us know when we get to the spot where Baines was killed.
It's up in the hills, just after we clear the next cove.
Rosie points towards a white, palatial-looking building with 4 towers. It's surrounded by palms on top of a wooded cliff. Bond gets up and puts his fishing rod down.
Hey, Quarrel! Who the hell lives up there?
That's the house of the Kananga woman. She's supposed to have the power of the Obia. No one on the island dare go up there except him.
Solitaire sits on a bejeweled chair at a black table.
He comes again. there will be violence. He approaches even now.
By land or water?
Water.
Kananga communicates with Solitaire from his office via radio as Quarrel's grimy boat edges past a covered jetty as he prepares to moor the vessel.
He has arrived.
Good. Rosie's been more efficient than I anticipated.
I know a place where we could rustle up a car.
Ah, beautiful, brave, and now resourceful. Rosie, you seem to be staging a remarkable comeback.
Tell me about the future.
The serene Solitaire turns over a card. She is slightly phased as she looks down at the card. It's the lovers, two naked figures entwined by a serpent.
Is it death?
I said, is it death?
It is death.
Kananga picks up a telephone.
They're coming. Rosie knows what to do. Now I want no bodies this time. No trace.
Bond drives an open-top car up a steep, bumpy, dusty track.
It's down there.
But I thought you said Baines was killed up in the hills, darling.
Up in the hills down there.
Why don't we have a bite of lunch and discuss it, There's an excellent patty in the hamper. I'm in no hurry. Are you?
No.
In the bushes is a wooden voodoo scarecrow. In a secluded spot in the shade beside a babbling stream, Bond and Rosie lie on a blanket kissing. The remnants of a picnic are around them as the bare-chested Bond rolls on top of Rosie, who wears his vest.
Oh, James. Oh, you don't know what finding you has meant to me.
Oh, I can imagine. And you've no idea what finding this has meant to me.
He holds up a card.
You do know what the Queen of Cups means in an upside-down position? A deceitful, perverse woman, a liar, a cheat, and I'd like some answers now.
Please, you don't understand, sir. They'll kill me if I do.
And I'll kill you if you don't.
Lying next to Rosie, Bond points his gun.
But you couldn't. You wouldn't. Not after what we've just done.
I certainly wouldn't have killed you before.
She looks away from Bond, then seeing something in the bushes, suddenly rises. It's an evil-looking voodoo scarecrow.
It used to be a convincing act, Rosie. It's wearing a little thin now.
It's not an act. It's...
Make your choice.
Bond has cocked his gun and now holds it to Rosie's head. Terrified, Rosie looks at the scarecrow with one painted eye in a black hole where the other should be. She runs into the bushes.
Rosie!
A wide-eyed Rosie hacks her way through the flora and fauna as Bond gives chase, hurriedly putting his jacket on as he does so. Rosie passes another scarecrow. Camera lenses emerge from its eye sockets and a gun barrel from its mouth. Bond rounds a corner and finds Rosie dead on the floor, a bullet wound in her back.
You will explain what went wrong.
Solitaire sits at her table in a red-lit room.
I see the intervention of a woman.
The girl was about to confess. We had to kill her. The trap was set. She was waiting. And you saw death.
It must have been the girl's death. If you do not ask specific questions, I cannot be responsible for your misinterpretation of the answers.
These growing signs of impertinence begin to disturb me, Solitaire, even as they did with your mother before you. She had the power and lost it, became useless to me. You will not make the same mistake. Solitaire. Where is Bond now?
He's on a hang glider fixed by a line to Quarrel's boat, dressed in dark clothes. As he takes in the aerial view in the dusk light, he's casually smoking a cigar. Quarrel is guiding the boat along the coast to Solitaire's palatial home.
Where is Bond now?
The table divides and Solitaire steps out of her ornate apparel.
I cannot see when you are this way with me. Things become unclear.
Let us hope these momentary lapses do not become a habit. Your power exists to serve me, and it is mine to control. If and when the time comes I decide you are to lose it, I myself will take it away. Solitaire, go to sleep. You have made me angry with you, and I have no wish to be. Tee?
Kananga and his henchman, the beaming Teehee, leave Solitaire. From his prime vantage point, Bond tosses his cigar away and presses a button on the hang glider frame. A red light near the wheel of the boat flashes, and Quarrel looks up. The taut line is disconnected and spirals downwards. Cut loose, Bond soars through the air like an eagle. A man armed with a machine gun stands on a clifftop edge, overlooking the bay. Quarrel's boat cuts a white wake through the dark waters, as Bond and his hang glider are a speck in the night sky. Bond gradually descends and approaches the clifftop sentry. He kicks the sentry in the back and he tumbles over the cliff. Bond comes in to land on a lawn in front of the house. As he steps away from the hang glider, he takes off his scarf, tears off his dark trousers to reveal light-coloured ones underneath, and reverses his jacket to match his trousers. He strolls inside. Three cards are thrown down. The Chariot, the Fool, and the High Priestess.
Put down those cards.
Bond's sitting in Solitaire's chair. She's wearing a full-length white nightdress.
It is a blasphemy! They tell nothing to those who cannot see.
Oh, but they do. That's a bit of luck. Good luck for both of us. The cards say we will be lovers.
Solitaire stares at him and suppresses a smile.
You're mistaken. It's impossible, forbidden for me. Now you must go.
But you do believe. I mean, really believe in the cards.
Well, they have never lied to me.
Then they won't now. Pick one.
Wearing her ornate cloak, Bond fans out the pack of cards and holds them out to Solitaire. Keeping her eyes fixed on Bond, she moves towards him, then looks at the pack. She's chosen the lovers. A shocked Solitaire in her translucent virginal nightdress turns away from Bond, who gives her a penetrating stare. He steps out of her cloak and moves over to her.
You knew the answer before it was given. Strangely enough, somehow, so did I.
Bond holds Solitaire by her arms, leaning in close. She is agape as she faces away from Bond. Slowly and anxiously, she turns to face him. They gaze at one another for a moment, before kissing. Bond lowers his hand, in which he's still clutching the pack of tarot cards, and drops them onto the table behind him. All the cards are the same, the lovers. Moonlight seeps through the curtains of a bedroom in which a snoozing Bond and a wide-awake Solitaire lie next to one another beneath a white sheet.
So it's finally happened. Just as it did to my mother and her mother before her.
Of course it did. Well, you're visual proof of that, aren't you? Come on, cheer up, darling. Has to be a first time for everyone. Now tell me, where's Kananga?
I cannot see.
Oh, yes, the cards. I'll get them.
No.
There's no need to be frightened. You'll soon be rid of him, I promise. I promise. I just need a little bit of information, that's all.
Power. I've lost it. The High Priestess. Wife to the prince no longer of this world. the spiritual bridge to the secret church. It was my fate. By compelling me to earthly love, the gods themselves have taken away my powers.
Darling, I've a small confession to make now. Try not to be too upset. The deck was slightly stacked in my favor.
It makes no difference. Physical violation cannot be undone. When he finds out I've lost my power, you kill me.
Come on, you have to find you first. Lover's lesson number one, we have no secrets. For example, I have a boat waiting. You can be on it. All I have to know before we leave is what goes on back there in Voodoo Land. Darling, 3 men and a girl have been killed in the last 4 days. Not counting the number of times they've tried to stop me from discovering whatever Kananga's protecting. Now, do you want to be on that boat or not?
I simply read the cards for him. I've never been there, and he has never taken me there.
An exasperated Bond lies back down. He looks at Solitaire, then at his watch, and jumps out of bed.
I've never dared to go, but I've looked in the cards. I've seen great riches there. They'll kill you.
Us, darling. They will kill us. Love is lesson number two. Togetherness. Till death do us part, or thereabouts.
Is there time before we leave? For lesson number three.
Bond is taken aback. He stops putting on his socks and begins to remove the clothes he's just put on.
Absolutely. There's no sense in getting off half-cocked.
A peaceful-looking Solitaire smiles as Bond's shirt comes off. Bond and Solitaire make their way through a forest as shafts of sunlight break through the trees.
This way.
How can you be so sure?
Well, these scarecrows are to scare people away. You're not scared, are you? Lesson number four, follow the scarecrows.
Bond and Solitaire walk past a white-shirted scarecrow in a clearing. They find themselves at the top of a steep slope that has steps cut into it. The steps lead down to a small stone church with a thatch roof, a crucifix above the door. There is a small graveyard with upright tombstones and a porched gate. A small waterfall is nearby. Bond and Solitaire enter the graveyard and a bald, shabbily dressed man rises up from behind a tombstone playing a bamboo flute. It's Samady.
Good morning, boss.
Morning.
It's sure going to be a beautiful day. Yes, a beautiful day.
As Bond and Solitaire move on, Samady sits back down. He slides open the flute and an aerial extends out. He speaks into the flute.
They're heading for the hill.
In a dark control room, Teehee picks up a phone.
Here.
Kananga's at his desk reading some letters, a speakerphone in front of him.
If he finds it, kill him.
Bond and Solitaire pass a scarecrow in a black coat and top hat. As they pass, its coconut head turns round, camera lenses protruding from its eye sockets. Teehee watches their progress on a bank of monitors in the control room. Bond and Solitaire find themselves at the top of a hill. They take in the panoramic view of lush fields and trees before them, and the waves lapping the shore in the distance. They head down the hill and into a field laid out with rows of small green bushes. Numerous canes are spread across the shaded field, supporting a net that covers the entire crop. A helicopter comes over the hill towards them. Bond spots the helicopter through the netting. He grabs Solitaire and they hit the ground as the bullets ricochet round them. Bond and Solitaire run through the field as the helicopter pilot scans the area.
We've lost him. He has the girl.
Bond leads Solitaire out of the field and through some tall grass as the helicopter hovers above, trying to spot them.
They're somewhere under the nets.
The helicopter flies away. Kananga is on the phone in his office.
Any cost, any, Bond must die.
Bond and Solitaire reach a barbed wire fence. Bond holds up the wire as Solitaire passes underneath it. They walk down the main street of a quiet, dusty village. Pigs, chickens and goats roam the street. A battered, rusting Routemaster bus is parked up. Three motorcycle cops watch them pass. One of them talks into his radio.
Unit 2-5, we have picked them up.
Bond and Solitaire walk self-consciously down the middle of the street. Two policemen watch them from a squad car.
Base 225, arrest Bond. But I repeat, the girl is not to be touched.
Message received and understood, over and out.
Base to all units. I repeat, the girl is not to be touched.
Solitaire hops onto the back of the bus as Bond starts it up. He looks over his shoulder as he drives off. The three motorcycle cops look at each other and smile before kick-starting their bikes. The bus drives down a narrow lane lined with coconut trees. Coconuts are strewn across the lane. Two black and white squad cars follow the motorbikes out of the village in pursuit. On a stretch of open road, Bond looks round to see the three motorbikes rounding a bend as they begin to catch up with the bus. Bond drives through a large puddle on a coastal road and skids the bus round 180 degrees. The lead motorcyclist has come off his bike, skidding along the road. The other two have careered off the road, one into the sea and another into a field. Bond's driving towards the two squad cars. They're sent spinning off the road. One of the cars rejoins the chase. The road is blocked by a lorry and two men on donkeys. Bond takes a right fork and passes a sign saying, Low Bridge. The two pursuing policemen in the squad car smile. Bond's face drops as the bridge comes into view. He speeds towards the bridge. The roof of the bus is torn off. The squad car collides into the roof and, covered by it, crashes into a lagoon. The roofless Routemaster heads through a town and screeches round a corner and onto a wooden jetty, causing people on it to leap clear into the water. Quarrel's boat is moored to the jetty.
Sweet mother of pearl!
All change, end of the line!
They leap off the bus.
Get down below, quickly. Here, I'll do that. You get us started.
Bond takes a machete from Quarrel. He cuts the mooring rope and the boat heads out to sea. In Kananga's office, he slams the phone down but appears calm. Down below on Quarrel's boat.
James, you'll be looking for me now. I know you'll never stop.
Come on, darling. It's all over. Voodoo land was just poppy fields. A simple matter of heroin smuggling. I'll have a word or two with a man named Felix and turn the entire case over to him, and you and I'll be off.
By the way, where would you like to go?
Anywhere where we can find one of these.
She lies back on a bunk. Bond goes up on deck where Quarrel's at the wheel and looks at the sea behind them stretching out to the horizon. Sharks circle the water near them.
How quickly can we make it to New Orleans?
Time to me now. 4 hours away. You can catch a flight and be there in the morning.
Then get in touch with Felix on the scrambler. Tell him to meet me there tomorrow. Royal Orleans Hotel.
Tampa is closer.
Hamilton was killed in New Orleans, so there has to be a connection. And this is a valuable piece of merchandise we're carrying.
which with any luck they'll want back.
Bond disappears below. Bond and Solitaire emerge from New Orleans International Airport and step into a taxi.
Royal Orleans Hotel, please.
The taxi glides out of the terminal. Looking at the back of the driver's head, Bond frowns. The driver's a black guy with an afro and bushy sideburns. Bond looks out of the back window, then back at the driver.
Are you sure this is the way to New Orleans?
I don't know. This show beat the hell out of Harlem, don't it?
It's the New York cabbie. He presses a button and the doors lock and a partition slides down.
Well, hello, Jim. What's happening, baby? Just ease back now, Jim. Relax. Mr. Big wants to see you.
The taxi turns into a small airport where there are several private planes on the tarmac. The taxi pulls up alongside one of the planes. There is a welcoming committee of three mean-looking guys. One of them opens the cab door for Bond, holding a gun. Bond approaches a guy in a loud, black-and-white checkered jacket.
You made a mistake back on that island, Bond. You took something that didn't belong to you, and you took it from a friend of Mr. Biggs. That type of mistake is tough to bounce back from.
Bond's shown towards the door of the plane.
But I've only just arrived.
Today is your lucky day, Jim. You're going skydiving.
There's a hell of a view of the lake from 10,000 feet.
My only regret is I won't be there to see it.
Solitaire swings her bag at Bond, who punches the guy in the jacket, then kicks the guy with the gun. He rolls underneath the plane and runs into a hangar. The hoods give chase. Bond emerges from the office of a flying school. He heads for a nearby Cessna and climbs in. Inside, an elderly woman in flying hat and large, round, coloured goggles looks at him, startled.
Good morning,
Mrs. Bell, you're not my instructor. Where's Mr. Bleeker?
Indisposed. I'll be giving the lesson.
A car full of hoods pulls up just as Bond departs in the two-seater Cessna.
What's on for today?
Let's just wing it, shall we, Mrs. Bell?
Bond's plane is chased around the airport by a red car, an orange car, and a blue pickup. Bond weaves through a row of parked planes and turns into a hangar, pursued by the red car and the pickup. Which collide into some barrels on a plane.
You're over revving.
The red car's heading towards a small blue plane. The red car's windscreen is shattered.
Leroy, slow down! The beat takes slow down!
What the man say?
I can't find a brake!
The red car has crashed into a large parked plane, whilst the orange car has mounted a ramp on the tail fin and dived into the wing. As Bond drives through a hangar, the doors are closing. He drives through a narrow opening, tearing the wings off the Cessna. Bond heads towards the gunman firing at him, but they jump clear before they're run over.
Okay, Don. Don't worry, I'll take care of it. Right. Talk to you later. I gotta go and give a lesson.
The dumbstruck instructor looks out of the window to see his wingless plane pulling up.
Same time tomorrow, Mrs. Bell?
Light is on the phone in a lavish hotel.
Yes, Mr. Bleeker. Yes, sir. But I know you just can't glue the wings back on. And now, Mr. Bleeker, I'm sure there's no reason for name-calling.
Well, that's fine. You can fit the rest this afternoon.
Right, sir.
Don't forget the double vents.
I appreciate she may be one of your best pupils.
Yes. Nicely. It's a little frantic. I'll keep the other three.
Yes, sir. Mr. Bleeker, any suggestion of that kind should be forwarded in writing to Washington.
How is Mrs. Bell?
Intensive care, but she'll pull through. Yes, sir. Oh, no, sir. No one's questioning your patriotism. I'm sure you're a veteran, sir.
Felix, you might find out if there's a Filet of Sole restaurant in town.
James, we're way ahead of you. It's down on Docker Street. Strutter's watching it now.
Strutter's on Docker Street watching the Filet of Sole from the same spot as Hamilton before him, smoking a pipe. The The funeral procession comes round the corner, headed by the same elderly man as before, holding his hat. Strutter gazes sympathetically at a weeping woman in the procession. The squat bespectacled guy sidles up to Strutter. He smiles at Strutter. A taxi pulls up on the street opposite. Bond and Leiter get out.
Hello, send-off. This way.
The two men pass the jubilant, colourful throng who dance down the street, some with coloured feather umbrellas. The weeping woman dressed in black is now dancing with a smile on her face. Bond and Leiter enter the Filet of Soul.
Where's Strutter?
He's got to be inside somewhere.
Bond and Leiter are approached by a red-jacketed, smiling waiter.
Two gentlemen. I got a nice booth over here, just against the wall.
Bond stops Leiter.
Do you think you could find something a little closer to the stage?
What's wrong with the booth?
I once had a nasty turn in a booth.
The waiter shows them to a small round table, just in front of the stage, in the red-walled club.
Bourbon, no ice, please.
Two Sazeracs. Where's your sense of adventure, James? This is New Orleans. Relax.
When you were young and your heart was an open book, you used to say, live and let live.
One of you guys called Felix Leiter?
Yeah, right here.
Telephone call for you. Guy called Strutter.
Thanks. For a minute there, I thought Harry was laying down on the job. Give it a
cry. Leiter goes to take the call as Bond turns his attention to the singer in the sparkly, full-length, rainbow-coloured dress. She spins round to reveal that the dress is cut to just below the small of her back. Bond suddenly drops down through the floor along with the table and chairs. The floor closes up and waiters hurriedly replace the furniture.
When you got a job to do, you got to do it well.
Leiter returns to the deserted table with two drinks on it.
What happened to my friend?
What happened to your friend? Listen.
Spotlights are turned on, blinding Bond.
Thanks for dropping in, baby. Yeah, you one tough pig to nail down. You've been picking at me like some kind of maggot. First you go up to Harlem and kill one of the brothers. And that disturbed me. But then you go and steal this valuable young lady from my good friend, Dr. Kananga. Now, old Kananga, he believes in all that card crap. I mean, he's mad.
Well, possession being 9 points of the law, I would say Kananga is your problem, huh? Thank you.
Bond sits down.
In fact, if I were you, I'd... Watch my step from now on.
Clamp secure his arms.
Yeah, well, you just let me handle our business with the man.
Two hoods exit, leaving Bond with Mr. Big, Teehee, and Solitaire.
I got my own plans for you, baby. But first, there's one little question that he wants answers for.
In that case, you better ship me back to the island and let him ask in person. I'm not in the habit of giving answers to lackeys.
You damn lucky you got an air left to hear the question with. Which is, did you mess with that?
Mr. Big points a gloved hand at Solitaire. Bond and Solitaire exchange an anxious look.
That's between Solitaire, myself, and Kananga. I'll tell him when I see him.
You ain't gonna see the sunlight unless you answer me!
I'd no idea you were so frightened of him.
Did you touch her?
When I see Kananga.
Right.
Mr. Big leans over Bond, picking at his face. His skin starts stretching and he pulls it off his face. Bond frowns as Teehee looks on with a large grin. More skin comes off, and he removes a wig to reveal Kananga.
Quite revealing. Kananga, poppy grower in thousands of acres of well-camouflaged fields protected by the voodoo threat of Baron Sandy. And as Mr. Big... Distributor and wholesaler through a chain of Filet of Soul restaurants.
Wholesale? Sell heroin for money?
My apologies, I'm sure you simply give it away.
Excellent, Mr. Park.
That's precisely what I intend to do. 2 tons of it, to be exact. When entering into a fiercely competitive field, one finds it advisable to give away free samples. Man or woman, black or white, I don't discriminate.
Kananga's wiping off the false skin.
2 tons of heroin with a street value well over $1 billion, nationally distributed free. Well, that should make a certain group of fan other angry, wouldn't you say?
Angry? Why, my dear Mr. Bond, it'll positively drive them out of their minds and subsequently out of the business.
Quite ingenious, a sort of junkies' welfare system.
Well, merely until the number of addicts in the country has doubled, shall we say. Then I will begin to market that acreage that you blundered into the other day. That heroin will be very expensive indeed, leaving myself and the phone company the only two going monopolies in this nation for years to come.
And here I thought it was Solitaire did the fortune-telling.
Let's hope for both your sakes she still can.
Kananga spins Bond's chair round.
The question still stands, Mr. Bond, asked by the gentleman concerned. Did you touch her?
Well, it's not the sort of question a gentleman answers.
Well, having set the example, I don't expect Miss Solitaire to be any less the lady.
Kananga returns to his place at the end of a long table and, leaning on it, stares at Bond.
By the way, that's a particularly handsome watch you're wearing, Mr. Bond. May I see it, please?
You'll forgive me if I don't get up.
Teehee fumbles at Bond's wrist.
Butterhook.
Using his real hand, Teehee gets the watch off Bond's wrist and tosses it across the table to Kananga, who catches it. He glares at Bond, then Solitaire, before looking at the watch.
Teehee. On the first wrong answer from Miss Solitaire, you will snip the little finger on Mr. Bond's right hand.
Teehee grabs Bond's finger with his hook.
Starting with the second wrong answer, you will proceed to the more vital areas.
A worried-looking Bond has been turned away from Solitaire.
Solitaire, my dear, I want you to listen to me very carefully. On the back of Mr. Bond's watch, the registration number 3266. Do I speak the truth?
Kananga keeps his eyes fixed firmly on an anxious Solitaire who's seated next to him at the table. Teehee is grinning like a Cheshire cat. In front of Solitaire, some cards are arranged in 3 columns and 1 row. She takes a card from a pile and places it on the central column.
Speak the truth.
Kananga turns his stare to Bond, who raises his eyebrows. Teehee's smile has dropped and Solitaire looks down nervously. Kananga leans back in his chair and nods at Teehee, who turns Bond's chair to face Kananga and releases the clamps on his wrists. A cheerful Bond rubs his wrists.
Well.
Kananga throws back the watch.
If nothing else, at least I've laid your fears to rest. My compliments on a splendid operation. There is one thing, however,
Teehee's knocked Bond out. Kananga presses a button and a wall panel slides open to reveal the rotund, whispering waiter.
Whisper. Take him to the farm.
Whisper, dressed in red, carries the unconscious Bond out of the room. Teehee leads the way. Samady struts in, brandishing a cane, looking fly in a black suit, spotted shirt and matching neckerchief plus a velvet fedora at a jaunty angle. He drops the hat on the table next to Solitaire. Samady stands behind Solitaire, drumming his fingers on the back of her chair. An uncomfortable Solitaire gets up as Kananga looks impassive.
When do we start back?
Solitaire passes Kananga as she paces round the room. He swivels his chair to face her.
Soon, Solitaire. Soon.
Solitaire has her back to the two men as Samady picks up the card that she chose for Kananga's test. He sets light to it, then shows it to Kananga, who shakes it vigorously.
Why? I treated you well, you lacked for nothing.
I don't understand what
you... Mr. Bond's watch, my dear. I gave you every break possible. You had a 50-50 chance.
You weren't even close.
I had no choice. Please believe me. Gods.
His eyes fixed on Solitaire, Kananga rises and walks over to her. She has her back to him. She looks at him warily as he places a hand on her shoulder and turns her round to face him. He spins away, then whips his hand back.
When the time came, I myself would have given you up. You knew that.
You knew that!
Baron Samedi picks up a card.
There's only one proper way to deal with this.
Samedi turns it over. Death. Bond is in the back of a car between two of Kananga's men. Gates with a warning, trespassers will be eaten, open, and the car drives through. A crocodile stalks across the dust track in front of them. Teehee is sitting beside the driver, the guy in the loud checkered jacket. Bond is unconscious as the car comes up to a wooden house in a clearing. Bond comes to as he's hustled from the car. Teehee leads Bond across a wooden bridge. Bond looks around as he crosses it. Crocodile skulls are perched on poles. Bond follows Teehee up steps to the building and enters. They're in a laboratory. A man in a white coat shows Teehee a clipboard.
The tannage order is nearly complete.
We move it out tonight.
Bond watches a conveyor belt with trays on it.
And I mean tonight. Mr. Bond.
Teehee and Bond walk out onto a veranda and down the steps to walk beside a lake.
How much do you know about crocodiles, Bond?
Oh, I've always tried to keep them at arm's length myself.
Baby crocodiles.
Cute little nippers, ain't they?
I don't suppose those potential overnight bags are orphans.
Oh no, we have some moms and dads as well.
Teehee picks up a tray sitting on some containers.
In fact, quite a few thousand.
Bond looks around at the basking and swimming crocodiles. Teehee opens a container. Inside, meat. The crocodiles rush into the water.
This is the part I like best. Feeding time.
I suspect the highlight of the tour.
Teehee lifts chunks of meat with his hook. A gunman indicates for Bond to follow Teehee out onto a jetty. Teehee tosses the meat into the lake, where the crocodiles are now thrashing about.
Some of these babies live to be 200 years old. Look over there. That's an alligator. You can always tell by its round nose. There's old Albert. And he's a croc. Got over careless with him some time back and he took my whole arm off.
Well done, Albert.
They'll eat anything, even each other. Then again, sometime they can go a whole year without eating.
Oh, I was rather counting on that.
There are two ways to disable a crocodile, you know.
Bond turns to see the part of the jetty Teehee's standing on being winched back.
I don't suppose you care to share that information with me?
Well, one way is to take a pencil and jam it in the depression hole behind his eyes.
And the other?
Oh, the other's twice as simple. You just put your hand in his mouth and pull his teeth out.
Bond is left standing on a little island of rock in the middle of the lake. Crocodile heads surface from the muddy brown water. Bond looks anxiously around and sees more crocodiles. Finding a piece of meat on the rock, he tosses it into the water. Bond adjusts his tide, then sees a crocodile swim towards his rock. Bond spots a canoe at the water's edge. He raises his wrist and turns a dial on his watch. The rollocks on the canoe spin round, and the canoe starts moving towards the island. It's held back by its mooring rope. As Bond looks at the rope, one crocodile begins to climb onto the rock. Bond has his back to it. He turns as it clambers onto his little island. They face each other. Bond throws some more meat to it. Others are climbing up. Bond wipes his forehead with the sleeve of his jacket. There are several of the creatures now on the rocky island. Bond backs away. Bond notices there are crocodiles between him and the shore. They're floating on the surface. He runs across their backs, using them like stepping stones. On dry land, he turns to see his little island full of crocodiles. His captors are nowhere to be seen. Bond starts tossing food into the lake. He takes a tray of food, opens a gate from the lake, and throws the food on the ground and onto the veranda of the building. He watches as a crocodile starts to follow the trail of food up to the building. Bond runs round to the back. Bond opens a can of kerosene and starts to spray it liberally over sacks and rubbish on the veranda. As the crocodile enters the building, Bond lights a rag and tosses it onto the kerosene. Inside the building, the man with a clipboard spots the crocodile. He alerts the others. Everyone flees from the now burning building. Bond throws another burning rag at the side of the building. As more flames erupt, Bond races down a jetty to a boat. Teehee runs outside. He spots Bond.
Evan, get him! Adam, to the car! Cut him off! Make your move, damn it!
Bond speeds off, and on Teehee's instructions, the car driver reverses back down the track. Bond skips across the water, and the checkered jacketed driver on the road tries to keep up.
Bond ripped off one of our boats. He's headed for the Irish Bayou.
The man that gets him stays alive.
Now move, you man!
A group of men leap into action and run to boats. Four speed off in the direction of the Irish Bayou. The boats head down different channels. Bond zips through a small gap and accelerates across the water. He slews left when he spots two of the boats hunting for him. They set off on his tail. A third boat joins the other two in pursuit of Bond, who keeps just ahead of them. In a part of the bayou surrounded by trees, Bond seems to be hemming himself in. He speeds up. He hits a strip of land, soars up and lands on more water. Two of his pursuers do likewise, not so the third. He hits a tree. The chasing car passes a signboard, Louisiana, the sportsman's paradise welcomes you.
Toby.
In a patrol car.
Toby. I got me a regular Ben-Hur down here, doing 95 minimum.
Need any help, J.W.?
Hell no!
The sheriff, a round-faced man wearing his uniform and hat, chews tobacco as he sets off in his patrol car. Kananga's driver turns onto a track and slows to a halt. The driver gets out, walks to the front of the car and faces the water. He pulls out his gun and checks it. He puts the gun away as he sees the sheriff driving down the track towards him. The sheriff climbs out of the car.
You got a set of wheels you just won't quit, boy. If there's yours, that is, You spin around, boy. 10 fingers on the fender.
The sheriff has his gun drawn.
Legs apart. I'm sure this ain't exactly your debut with this sort of thing. You picked the wrong Paris to haul ass through, boy. Nobody cuts and runs on Sheriff J.W. Pepper. And it's him speaking, by the by.
J.W. turns to see Bond heading straight for him and the car.
What the?
The boat soars over J.W. who falls to the ground. His unintentional shot hits Bond's outboard motor. The first pursuing boats fail to make the leap across the track, landing on J.W.'s patrol car. He ducks as the second flies over him. The driver takes the opportunity to escape. On his knees, J.W. sees the two boats herring down the bayou. The escaping car stops him firing on the crashed boat driver. Two Louisiana state troopers drive up.
You tell Miss Pearson take a flyer.
That looked like a boat. Stuck in the sheriff's car there, Eddie?
Boy, where you been all your life? That there's one of them new car boats.
By the powers invested in me by this parish, I hereby do commandeer this vehicle and all those persons within. And that means you, smartass.
Bond looks round to check on the boat behind him as the engine starts to splutter. Petrol oozes out of the bullet hole in the outboard motor. The chasing boat gains on Bond. A man sits in a garden chair reading a paper. His back lawn stretches down to the water. Bond steers onto the garden and the chasing boat does the same. It screeches over the grass and lands in the pool. Bond leaps out of his boat, which has come to rest on the grass, and jumps into a boat on the bayou. His two pursuers get to their feet but can't get a clear shot. On the bayou, Bond slaloms through the vegetation. In the fourth boat, which is hovering on the edge of the bayou, the driver has a gun in his hand. Bond gets to his feet and spots him over the tall grass. Bond accelerates away. JW's in the rear of the state trooper's car.
Unit 23 in position. 10-4, 23. Come in, 28.
Hey, JW, seems like Deke Rogers done got his boat stole off the river. But picked up a new one in his swimming pool.
Sheriff, you want to get your boys off our frequency?
Give me that! Now you listen to me, trooper boy! We got a swamp full of black Russians driving boats to beat the dam down here!
Relax, Sheriff. We've got a roadblock waiting for them at Miller's Bridge.
Unit 26 at Miller's Bridge. We're just about all set here.
Take extra care there! Yeah?
A flotilla of boats is moored under the wooden bridge.
Okay, fellas. Here they come.
Bond heads straight for the center span. The chasing boat also barges through the vessel, blocking its path. The car with JW in pulls up by the bridge.
All right, out of the way, I'm in charge here. You two boys, come on.
He walks to the water's edge and sees people floundering.
I don't want excuses, trooper. I want those two men and their boat apprehended immediately. Did you hear?
Yes, sir, Captain. I understand, but I don't know right off where we're going to find the boat fast enough to catch it.
I got it. You call my brother-in-law Billy Bob. He got the fastest boat in the whole damn river. Billy Bob's sure no fix-a-ass. Here, call Billy Bob.
Kananga's driver pulls up by the State Wildlife Department Ranger Station 1.
Now there's two boats, Billy Bob, and they're moving like bothered pigs. Now I promised these boys here you'd get them. Don't let me down here.
Cool down, JW. I'm on my way.
Billy Bob sees the driver.
Want something, boy?
Yes, I'd like to borrow this boat, if I may.
Everybody on the river would like to borrow this boat.
The driver clubs Billy Bob.
Billy Bob, we got them spotted. They're headed for Haley's Land.
Now in Billy Bob's boat, the driver zooms away from the jetty and the unconscious ranger. JW sees Billy Bob's boat approaching.
That's my brother-in-law! That's Billy Bob!
Bob, he'll get him. Billy Bob will get him. Ah, damn! If one side of the Pepper family don't get him, the other side will. Let's go!
JW turns away and doesn't see the black driver. The troopers are open-mouthed. Two state troopers' cars race along the road. JW grins and wipes his face. His tongue sticks out. Bond is still being chased by the fourth boat. Billy Bob's boat is catching up on the chasing boat. As they move through the bayou with its trees and flat grassland on either side, Billy Bob's boat passes the other. Bond follows the bend in the river, and the three vessels turn in file, while the two patrol cars, lights flashing and sirens blaring, race along the road. The boats snake through the bayou. A wedding ceremony is being held in a waterside garden.
Any man can show just cause why they may not lawfully be joined together. Let him now speak, or else hereafter.
Bond skips over the grass and onto the river. Billy Bob's boat follows the bend in the river. The last boat goes via the wedding cake. The marquee collapses and the bride cries on the groom's shoulder.
Headquarters to all units. Suspect seen proceeding down via Liberty towards Highway 11. Proceed with caution.
In front of JW is a vintage oyster truck.
Did you ever think of getting a driver's license, boy?
Three cars pass the bearded old driver in the vintage truck. On the water, Bond heads towards a marina. The driver in Billy Bob's boat pulls out his gun. Bond veers right, skips up the riverside across the road in front of the leading patrol car, down the other side and back onto water. Billy Bob's boat passes between two cars in its pursuit. The lead car hits some roadworks, tips over and lands on its roof. The second car smashes into it, the third into the second and a fourth into that. The vintage truck judders along towards them. JW rolls out of the patrol car.
Are you sure that was your brother-in-law, Sheriff?
The vintage truck driver honks his horn. Bond moves out to an area with old ships moored in a bay. Billy Bob's boat speeds in and spins in a big circle, looking for Bond. The driver eases off the throttle and the boat glides round the prow of a ship. Smoke rises from a building on the quayside. The driver picks up a rifle from the deck of Billy Bob's boat. Bond, at the quayside, is filling a paint tin with petrol. Bond surges past Billy Bob's boat and it immediately accelerates in chase. Bond speeds towards the shore, then veers left, and executes a wide U-turn heading towards the pursuing boat. Bond throws petrol from the paint tin over the driver, who rubs his eyes. Bond speeds up behind him and engages the throttle, sending Billy Bob's boat into a spin. The two boats collide and Billy Bob's races up the open hull of an old ship. It erupts in a massive fireball, sending flames and a plume of black smoke up into the clear blue sky. A sign at the entrance to a marina requests, "Make boating a fun sport, 3 miles per hour, please." On the quayside, Leiter and a host of agents and police watch as Bond enters the marina. Bond waves. An exasperated Leiter strolls over as Bond berths.
Hello, Felix. What are you doing here?
We'll get to that later. Kananga's in town. He's got your girl with him. They just took off.
A battered squad car rolls up, JW leaning out of it.
There's a son of a bitch, I got him!
The door falls off and JW clambers out.
What are you? Some kind of doomsday machine, boy! Well, we got a cage strong enough to hold an animal like you here!
Captain, would you enlighten the sheriff, please?
Yes, sir. JW, let me have a word with you. JW, now this fellow's from London, England. He's an Englishman working in cooperation with our boys, a sort of secret agent.
Secret agent? On whose side?
We busted the Filet of Soul an hour ago. We came up with nothing but these.
Burn tarot cards.
Penang is clear.
You should have seen the size of the guy who got on the boat with him. 9 feet tall, I swear. Big top hat, a cockamamie flute in one hand and solitaire in the other.
Night. On San Monique, flaming torches burn and people dance in the clearing where Baines was sacrificed. Three men run up to the red and white poles stuck in the ground and gyrate against them. Several women race up and genuflect repeatedly before backing away and resuming dancing. Out at sea.
The incendiary bombs are set for midnight. Now that gives you exactly 30 minutes. Watch out for sharks on the way back.
I'll see you for breakfast, Felix.
Good hunting.
Bond and Quarrel slide down into a dinghy. The latter wears a belt with the explosive slotted into it. They row from a motor launch to the shore. Quarrel drags it up the beach and Bond leaps out and starts to climb up a hillside.
You're going to need these and the shotgun on the way back.
A bag of ammunition.
Seems like the party started.
My regards to Baron Samedi, man. Right between the eyes.
Bond makes his way in darkness to the graveyard. A man in a white suit and two acolytes approach the poles and ring handbells. Bond, hidden behind a gravestone, watches the white church at the edge of the clearing. The doors burst open and Solitaire, dressed in white, is dragged and pushed into the crowd. She's lifted in the air. She's borne above people's heads towards the poles. Bond looks to his left and sees a woman in white holding a candle, leading a group of men carrying a coffin. As Solitaire is bound between the two red and white striped poles, the four men lay the coffin on the ground. The coffin lid is partially open. From behind a gravestone, a goat's head mask appears. The figure wearing the mask rises. He moves to the coffin and opens the lid. Inside are a multitude of snakes. He picks up a green and yellow one and raises it above his head. He writhes and prances towards the crowd. The snake man dances his way to Solitaire. Bond checks his watch. It's 10 minutes to midnight. Quarrel is in the poppy fields laying the explosives. The man holds the snake's head towards Solitaire. Its mouth is open. Bond creeps closer. The man moves nearer Solitaire with the snake, then spins round. Bond looks up into the trees, then turns as the snake is brought closer to Solitaire. Her eyes follow the snake as the man draws a circle with it in the air in front of her. Bond tenses as the snake is swung in front of Solitaire. He checks his watch. It's 5 minutes to midnight. The snake is moved closer, and Solitaire backs her head away from it. The man writhes and gyrates in front of her. The snake is almost touching her flesh. Bond raises his gun. The music stops and the snake man dances away with the snake. The man in the white suit and his two acolytes come out of the church. He is carrying a white, tall hat. At a grave, he raises it above his head, the feather in the front visible to all. He lowers the hat to the ground, and an acolyte rings a bell. The second acolyte rubs a machete against the gravestone, then taps it. All three of them kneel. Almost everyone is on their knees watching the hat. It starts to rise with a white painted face underneath it. People cross themselves repeatedly. The figure wearing the hat has white on the upper half of the face, white dots on the neck, and white paint over the breastbone and collarbones. He's painted to look like a skeleton wearing a tall hat. His eyes flash open and the snake man dances over to Solitaire. Bond shoots him. Bond aims at the skeleton. Bond shoots off the hat and the top of the porcelain head. The eyes roll upwards. Bond shoots again. The skeleton disintegrates. Bond rushes towards the crowd, his gun pointing towards them. He shoots a man who charges. Bond kicks away a man who runs for the fallen attacker's machete, picks it up himself and uses it to cut the ropes binding Solitaire. The crowd cowers as the explosives lay waste to the poppy fields. Bond takes Solitaire by the hand and they run through the graveyard. Another skeleton pops up. With exactly the same makeup as the first, the skeleton figure opens its eyes and then a broad, toothy grin appears on its face. It's Baron Samedi. He picks up a machete and spins round. The snakes react. His mouth open wide, he raises the machete and lunges at Bond. Bond parries, then punches Samedi into the coffin of snakes. Bond taps the gravestone with the machete. An operator below presses a lever and the platform on which Bond and Solitaire are standing descends. He kicks out the operator and fights with two other red-shirted guards. From behind a screen, a man sees Bond and Solitaire flee through a steel door, which closes.
Trouble!
Bond and Solitaire run through an underground tunnel, then pause for breath and take cover as a door ahead of them opens. More guards come running into the tunnel, but don't spot the fugitives. Bond takes Solitaire's hand and they run off. In an underground cavern, they slow down and Bond walks ahead of her. They reach another metal door. They hide in its recess as guards race past on the far side of the cavern. Bond presses a button. The door slides open. They run through and it closes behind them. They see Kananga.
Ah, Mr. Bond, there you are. And Miss Solitaire as well. Hardly unexpected, but most welcome. Whisper, two more glasses for our guests. What shall we drink to, Mr. Bond?
How about an earthquake?
Kananga indicates for them to join him. At the boat, Leiter helps Quarrel up from the dinghy.
Welcome home. Where's our boy?
He'll be along any time now. I check behind a rock and his wetsuit is gone.
Bond places his gun on a tray.
Keep the change.
Bond has picked up a glass of champagne.
It is unfortunate that your wetsuit was discovered only minutes before the field was destroyed.
Oh, don't tell me you're not insured.
No. The poppy's a very sturdy flower.
You have been a relatively minor nuisance, in fact. But this gun, I find it particularly fascinating. What is it?
A shotgun, naturally, with compressed gas pellets.
Whisper, the big hitman, lounges on a sofa. Kasanga turns to him, pointing the gun. Kasanga shoots the sofa, which inflates like a bouncy castle. Whisper tumbles backwards against the wall. He lands on the floor when the sofa bursts.
Ingenious!
Don't pull the pin out. The air in here is foul enough already.
Somehow I never thought of you as a poor loser. I was hoping you would join me to a drink to the future. Oh, Miss Solitaire used to know all about the future. She was especially good in predicting death.
They stroll into a room with a monorail track.
An underground monorail.
Connected to the last refuge of a scoundrel, no doubt.
The heroine leaves here, I take it, carried somewhere by that winch.
Correct again, Mr. Bond. What a quick study you are. Let me show you exactly how it works.
Where in hell can the man be?
Relax. He must have got tied up somewhere.
On the winch.
These cans hold 25 pounds each. 20 cans to a shipment, packed in watertight, metal container.
Sure, showing all that, Kananga, but I'm sure there must be a simpler way of drowning someone.
Drown, Mr. Bond? I doubt you get the chance to drown.
Kananga sets the pellet on a table and slips a long knife from a sheath. Kananga steps towards the two bound captives, his eyes fixed on them. He pulls up Bond's sleeve, exposing his bare arm. Kananga then runs the blade across Bond's skin. He makes one cut, then a second, then a third.
I think you'll find those wounds quite fatal.
He raises his hand, and Whisper turns to the winch control. The metal frame Bond and Solitaire are tied to rises off the ground. Bond glances across at the pellet, then turns the face of his watch. The pellet adheres to the watch. Bond tries to get at it, Whisper's working the winch controls. The frame, some 6 feet off the ground, is winched over a water channel. Blood from Bond's cuts start to drip into the water. Bond gets the pellet into his mouth. Kananga grins.
Whisper! The gate. Oh, slowly, Whisper, slowly, slowly. Let our diners assemble.
The frame is slowly being lowered. The gate has opened and a shark makes its way through the opening towards the channel. More sharks make their way towards the blood still dripping from Bond's arm. Bond spins the face of his watch and it rotates at speed. He uses it like a small circular saw to cut into the ropes binding him. His hands are free. He unties Solitaire. Whisper sees Bond forward roll and swing on the frame.
Look out.
Bond kicks Whisper, who lands in an open canister. Bond closes it and Kananga attacks with the knife. Bond fends him off, but the armed Kananga forces Bond to the water's edge. Kananga lunges. Bond sidesteps and wrestles the knife from him. Both men fall in the water as the first shark draws closer. Kananga, with Bond's arms around him, points to the shark. Bond removes the pellet from his mouth and sticks it in Kananga's as the two of them surface. He then pushes Kananga underwater and climbs out. Kananga inflates and floats to the ceiling. Solitaire cringes as the Prime Minister explodes. Bond goes over to the winch controls and lowers Solitaire.
Where's Kananga?
Well, he always did have an inflated opinion of himself.
She jumps down in Bond's arms.
Oh, James. How do we get out of here?
We take the train, of course.
Later at a railway station.
Well, thanks for everything, Felix. I'll see you tomorrow night at the 21 Club and don't be late.
I still don't see why you want to travel this way. I mean, what the hell can the two of you do on the train for 16 hours?
They stare at Leiter.
Say goodbye to Felix, darling.
Mailbags are loaded onto the train.
And the first thing to learn in playing gin rummy is to never take a card from the exposed pile unless you really need it.
Gin. James, what are you doing?
He lowers a bed and plumps the pillows.
Just testing an old adage. Unlucky at cards.
In the mail van, a guard hands a slip of paper to a guy. One of the mailbags is slit open from the inside. The slit is made by Teehee's hook. In their compartment, Solitaire is filing her nails. Bond is in the bathroom.
Do hurry up, James.
Won't be a moment, darling.
Solitaire smiles, finishes her manicure and places the file in a vanity box. She climbs up the ladder to the bed. A hand reaches for a fuse box, and Teehee runs his hook along the wires, fusing them. Solitaire grins as the lights dim in the compartment.
Lock the door as well on your way up, would you, James? After all, you wouldn't want anyone to just walk in on us, would you?
The door bolt slides open.
First time in my life I feel like a complete woman. The slightest touch of your hand. I was always so afraid that a part of me would stay with the past. I know there's no chance of that any longer. Just to be able to reach out and touch you.
Teehee snaps the bed shut.
Mr. Bond, it's good to see you again.
Bond flicks cards in Teehee's face. The big man goes for Bond. They fight and Teehee uses his hook to rip through a shelf Bond has torn off the wall. Teehee smashes the wall into the bathroom. Bond forces Teehee back with the ladder for the bed. Teehee destroys that. He pushes Bond away. Bond struggles with both hands to keep the hook from inflicting damage. Teehee forces Bond against the window and throws a punch. Bond holds onto the window frame with one hand and Teehee with the other. Teehee shoves Bond down onto the seat. Bond reaches for his assailant's sleeve. Teehee punches Bond with his good hand and forces him back against the main window and grins. The nippers move close to Bond's face. He manages to hold them at bay using both hands to do so. Bond spots the manicure set in Solitaire's vanity case. He reaches for the nail clippers and takes them up to the wires on Teehee's bare metal arm. Cutting the last one locks the nippers round the window fastener. Bond elbows the helpless Teehee in the kidneys. He's stuck fast to the window. Bond rubs his neck, then hears Solitaire's muffled cries. Bond picks Teehee up. This lowers the window. Bond tosses Teehee out and he detaches from his arm. Bond climbs up and lowers the bed.
Well, that wasn't very funny.
He pats her arm and goes to the window.
Now what are you doing?
He disposes of the metal arm and closes the window.
Just being disarming, darling.
Baron Samedi sits on the front of the train. ITFC audio description by Michael Woodford and James O'Hara.
Say live and let die.